Good afternoon. I'd like to call to order the House Committee on Energy, Environment, and Water. We have a short agenda today. Certainly different than our last meeting. Colleagues, thank you for your patience. If I'd been chairing, we certainly wouldn't have passed that many bills last Thursday, but no, it was a record-setting pace, and I want to thank my co-chair for his hard work and his able chairing that day.
Thank you.
So I'm left with two bills. They're both Senate bills, and I'd like to open a public hearing to start with on Senate Bill 626. And you'd think if the Senate sent a bill over, they'd have some senators over here.
Oh, there's one now. Sorry. I thought we dealt with this last session.
Well, we're going to button it up. So, Senator Morris, with all that, we really are glad you're here. So come on forward, and we'll accept your look forward to your testimony. You want to bring Kurt, too?
Yes, please.
Well, he's welcome as well.
Chair Gilliam, Chair Cannon, colleagues, for the record, Frank Morris. I represent the Corvallis-Albany area, known as District 8, in the Oregon Senate. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss Senate Bill 626. I need to maybe offer a disclaimer. There are some things that I enjoy in life more than life itself, and that's enjoying the great resources that we have in our country with a fly rod in my hand in search of the largest fish in the water that's before me. That's my passion in life. And that passion carries over to the state of Oregon, having been fortunate to experience fly fishing and the great world that we live in many countries in the world. I believe that Oregon has resources that are unparalleled and in ways not developed that they can be in terms of creating those quality experiences for people that have a passion for the outdoors and for angling opportunities. The bill is very simple. It may be the shortest bill that comes before you, but I would read Section 1, the first paragraph. The State Department of Fish and Wildlife shall undertake a study of creating a program to be known as the Quality Fresh Waters Program that is devoted to enhancing the ability of the department to develop and protect unique angling opportunities that contribute to the reputation of Oregon as a world-class angling destination. And I'm very, very pleased to have had the support of groups that share the same passion, and they will be testifying, and the Department of Fish and Wildlife as well. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would conclude my remarks and would look forward to the department's comments as well.
Thank you, Senator. Kurt, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Gilliam. Chair Cannon, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kurt Melcher, Deputy Director of the Department of Fish and Wildlife. I did provide you some brief written comments on Senate Bill 626 as well, and I would just add that the department internally, we've been discussing a concept like this for several years. We think this bill gives us essentially the jump start, if you will, to move forward on developing that program and bringing back alternatives, including alternative funding mechanisms to the legislature in the next full session, 2 years from now. We would anticipate utilizing we have a standing committee, which is a sport fishing advisory committee, which we meets quarterly, and we use them to help us with angling regulations and other fish management issues. We would expect to engage that group as well as utilizing existing staff resources to start developing and fleshing out this concept as well. There's been similar bills in the last session along these similar lines. Last session was referring to the Blue Ribbon Fisheries Bill. Same concept, just a slightly different name. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions and look forward to working with the Senator and others on this issue.
Thank you both. Vice Chair Krieger.
You're getting good. You wouldn't even look at it. You saw the finger moving. Just a couple of maybe questions. We talked a little bit about this last year, Kurt, and
Senator Morse was over. I kind of changed my mind since last year. I think the concept is probably more than worthy of taking a look. I saw a program, I mentioned it to you on TV, what was taking place in Russia, and some of those areas have basically been untouched, and they're keeping it very pristine. I know you're going to do a study, but in the back of your mind, are we can you give us any idea about maybe what areas or streams would be the type of candidates Oregon would have, miles that you think might be needed to achieve it, to protect the area long enough that, you know, size long enough to get to where we want to go, and then the issue of hook and release and type of gear, barbless, those type of things.
You want to tackle that, Kurt?
Sure. First? Chair Gilliam, Chair Cannon, Representative, or Co-Chair, Co-Vice Chair Krieger. We certainly don't have any preconceived notions in terms of which rivers, streams, or standing waters may be included in a program like this. We're really going to be looking to the public and to our Sport Fishing Advisory Committee to help us with some of those discussions. You'll recall in the last session there was a lot of discussion about individual water bodies, and there was a lot of some fear, perhaps unwarranted, but fear that they were going to be included and there was going to be higher fees associated with their area. So I think we're going to have that discussion with the committee, with, you know, through a public process to really get a handle on what people are interested in. And I think we had a lot of discussion on the Senate side as well in terms of, is this focused only on trout or individual species? And the answer over there was no. It could actually include some. We do have some tremendous and unique fishing opportunities in this state for species like in the Columbia walleye, some phenomenal smallmouth bass fisheries. Those could be part of the program. It's not restricted just to certain species or native species, if you will. We would expect that as part of this process, discussion of gear regulations will certainly be included in terms of enhancing the unique angling opportunities. And if there is a significant catch and release component, or if a particular fishery is a catch and release only fishery, then we're going to look closely at the gear requirements to assure that we have low mortality rates associated with those.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, I don't come to this with any preconceived ideas, but one thing that I do believe is that it would be a disservice if we attempt to create such exclusive kinds of opportunities that do not realize essentially the depth and breadth of people that enjoy fishing and angling opportunities. That being said, and that's also inclusive of warm water species, but that being said, I do believe that there's an opportunity through either slot limits or various management techniques to create opportunities that are truly unique and propagate opportunities for anglers to catch double-digit rainbows in this state and not make that something that is just, you know, it's so unique right now. How do you increase that, those kinds of opportunities? And I am familiar with British Columbia and how they manage their fisheries resources up there. They have what they call Class 1 waters. They're all catch and release. The Class 2s are catch and release. And they charge fees for non-residents to fish those waters. And those fees then go in to enhance the total angling opportunities. What we emerge with in Oregon, you know, it's a work in progress, but what we're hoping is that we set that in motion in a formal way that will actually achieve some benefits for anglers in our state.
Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was actually looking for some concrete examples, and I think through the discussion you've given me some examples, but what are some of the challenges that we face moving from today's management regimen to one that is quality fishing?
Gilliam, Representative Witt. I think the intent in this bill is to address one of the challenges, and that is funding. So the one of the tasks that's assigned to the department and thus to our Sport Fish Advisory Committee will be to come back to the legislature with mechanisms to fund work in these quality waters fisheries, if you will. And, you know, that can run the full gamut in fish management. It could be in a given water body stocking trophy quality fish. That could be something that would be explored under this this program. It may also mean additional enforcement if we have a particular area with poaching, if you will, that's affecting a quality fishery. So I think, and the big part of it for us is really, and I think the biggest part that we see is a marketing tool, and one that individuals can use to identify these areas and actually market them to, in particular, non-residents.
Mr. Chairman, please. Well, and will we be looking at establishing these fisheries across the various geographic areas of our state?
Chair Gilliam, Representative Witt, absolutely. We're not constraining this to any particular region. And, you know, I can tick down just in my head probably a dozen fisheries that I consider as their quality waters right now, and
yes.
And they would certainly qualify as a quality water fishery right now, and this program would then allow us to enhance those even further.
Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, and this will reveal a bias, and I need to be right up front. When I first started fishing, you know, I caught my first trout when I was 5 years old, my first steelhead when I was 8. But I grew up in a family where the experience was, did you catch your limit? You know, that was a successful day fishing, was catching your limit. And I think one of the biggest challenges in managing quality is migrating, again, identifying those areas that are suitable to a catch and release, more of a catch and release model. Today I exercise the fish. and you won't find a barbed hook in any of my fly boxes. And when I release, I never touch the fish. So I have this passion for, you know, how do you release the fish back into the environment and grow bigger? And we do eat fish. I enjoy eating fish. But a successful day fishing is not a catch limit. It's being there and just experiencing that. And I think that there are more and more fisher anglers, because women, fishermen is not the right word, fishers. there are more people that are enjoying it, and I think are realizing that as well. So, you know, and the folks that Kurt is talking about that would come to Oregon to enjoy these experiences, I think by and large are of that similar mind.
Thank you.
Chair Cannon.
Thank you. Senator Morris, appreciate the bill. Do you know, was there consideration in the Senate of sending this bill to Ways and Means? We have a fiscal that indicates approximately $75,000 of additional cost to the agency. And the reason I ask in part is that given everything that's happening in our natural resource budgets, projected cuts falling disproportionately on those agencies that are subject to general fund, which in natural resources are DEQ, Water Resources Department in particular, although Ag is also subject to some of that. Given the fact that we have the passage of Measure 76 results in an $8 million shift away from agencies, I'm very concerned about the idea of creating new programs within our natural resource agencies. And wonder if this was considered on the Senate side.
Well, thank you, Co-Chair Cannon. My hope is that as Kurt had mentioned, this is of great interest to the department as well, and that essentially redirected resources would be used to do this investigation. And I can't speak for the department, but...
Can I follow up on that?
Please.
So what would we not be doing in order to fulfill the requirement under this bill?
Yeah. Chair Gilliam, Chair Cannon, I'm not prepared to tell you specifically today. I can certainly follow up on that. But we do have a recreational fishing program staff. As I mentioned, we have a standing inland fishing advisory committee that works on fish issues. We essentially, if you will, we live recreational fisheries and recreational fishery management every year, 12 months out of the year, 365 days. And so we would essentially be reprioritizing some of that staff to work in with our sport fishing committee to develop this program, or develop actually options for you all and to report back in 2 years. Happy to follow up on more specifics if you'd like.
And I would appreciate that. And my suggestion is that perhaps this is the kind of consideration that ought to be made in the context of the agency's budget. Of course, that would happen in Ways and Means. And just so that the Senator probably understands our, I don't know if they're rules precisely, but our understanding from the co-speakers is that bills with a fiscal of greater than 10,000, even if it's other funds, the trigger might be somewhat higher for other funds, but certainly on general funds, is meant to go to Ways and Means. I assume the Senate operates under with a different kind of understanding, which is how we got the bill here, but just sort of forewarning on that possibility.
I hadn't considered that they don't have that same rule.
That's why we have to bill. I don't think they do.
Yeah.
Sure. Kurt, how many fish biologists have you got in your department that are in the field?
Chair Gilliam, Chair Cannon, Co-Vice Chair Krieger. And this is a really off-the-cuff answer, but it's a couple hundred.
189 for salmon steelhead. I just don't know how many other you had.
Yeah. We only have a small number of warm water-related fish biologists. So,
and the reason I say that is when the legislature and a senator comes to you to ask you to help develop a program that probably long-term will enhance Oregon's fisheries and actually draw people here who would not come otherwise, it helps our economy over the long term. That would help your department. I think it would be the expectation of us that you would find a way to get it done within the existing revenues, which you kind of indicated you're going to do.
Yeah. Co-chairs, Representative Krieger, that's correct. And we, as I mentioned in my testimony, we actually have been talking about this concept for almost 4 years internally. So we really see this as just a continuation of a process we had at least discussed internally for some time, and this certainly gives us additional impetus to move forward with that program.
One last thing. I know a senator or two and some reps that I'll bet you could hold a fundraiser in Corvallis and invite the fly-only people, Oregon Trout, the Native Fish Society, and I bet you we could raise that in one night if you need $75,000.
Fish fry.
We're not going to fry fish. We're going to talk about them. We're going to hook and release them.
Okay, I need your help on that. Any other questions for these two gentlemen? If not, so, thank you very much.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Boone.
Thank you. I would like to invite Senator Morse to fish with me, because then you'd be throwing them back so I can catch them. Right?
Darn Swedes want to eat everything.
All right. We have four more folks who would like to testify. So if Jim Myron and Tom Wolf will come up, we'll continue our testimony. Please.
Thank you, co-chairs and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jim Myron. I'm here representing the Native Fish Society. You've got my written testimony being passed out. Let me just briefly say a few things about this bill. And this is different than the one last session, because we left out all the specifics. We purposely did that so ODFW would have the opportunity to bring some folks together, like they mentioned, and kind of craft the thing with it via committee rather than trying to do something statutorily. And they're charged in the bill to come back to the 19 2012 session with a proposal for a program and a proposal for funding it. And we've got our own ideas about what that might include, and we will share those ideas with the group that that meets and helps ODFW to craft this proposal. But that's the idea. Rather than trying to dictate something here, which didn't work last time, and I don't think it would work again this time either. On the issue of the fiscal impact, and we know that that there is a fiscal impact statement that was produced for the Senate hearing. Ed Bowles, the fish director, spoke to that at the Senate hearing and said that that they would do that within existing staff resources simply by reprogramming a percentage of a few people's existing time, and it would take away from some other things that they're doing. And I think the fiscal impact statement mentions a few of the things that might not be done. So that is a consideration, definitely. But in the long term, I think this program has some promise to actually increase revenues over time while at the same time promoting these fisheries and focusing some funds on these particular areas so that they continue to be self-sustaining populations that are sustainable in the long term and continue to provide angling opportunities. So with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Jim. Go ahead, Tom.
Chair Gilliam, Chair Cannon, committee members, my name is Tom Wolf, Chair of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited. We are here to support Senate Bill 626. You have should have a copy of my testimony handed out, so I'm not going to go through it. I just want to mention two brief things. Number one, a few years ago, American Fisheries Society in their magazine, which is the represents all professional fishery biologists, in their magazine, Fisheries did a study of all 50 states as far as which ones bring in the most out-of-state anglers that come to their state and spend a lot of money. So Michigan was number one. Oregon was 47th. So we do not do a very good job in our state of marketing some tremendous fishing opportunities we have in this state. It's, you know, we have wonderful fisheries, whether it be smallmouth on the John Day, steelhead on the Umpqua and Rogue, Deschutes on Deschutes and the Wood and the Williamson. We have a lot of great opportunities. So I think this bill would open possibilities that we could look at ways that we could market fisheries so that we can bring in out-of-state people that are coming here to, frankly, spend money in our rural communities. Second point I want to make, last fall I was up on fishing the Shewakan River, which is way down in southeast Oregon, just about 30 miles north of the town of Lakeview. It flows out of the Cascades through a little town called Paisley and empties into the desert. We spent a week there fishing for Great Basin red bands, which are wonderful fish that get up to about 22 inches long. We had basically, this is early October during deer season, so we were the only fishermen up there. We had a great time, and we got a chance to spend lots of money, my friend and I, in the little town of Paisley, which has, of all things, a fly fishing shop. And this, and we're talking, Paisley is a town of no more than 200 people with one gas station, one store, one restaurant, and one coffee shop, and one fly shop. So I see this bill as a way that we can continue to increase great opportunities like this, protect wonderful fisheries like this, and bring money into wonderful little towns like Paisley. So I urge you to vote this bill out of committee. I think it's a great concept and should go forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Mr. Kutcher, I might mention, I know that you recently haven't not had a lot of non-controversial bills in front of you, but this one did pass the Senate 30-0. So,
thank you for pointing that out. You know, somebody, not necessarily me, might say it's counterintuitive if you're trying to get us up from 47th to a higher spot to potentially raise the fee you might pay to come in here and fish.
Chair Gilliam, committee members, that's a good question, and obviously we'd have to look at that. it's not the only option on the table. So that's a fair question. I don't have a fair answer for you now, but that's a good question.
Okay. Mr. Vice Chair.
If that fishery's developed where you have these, rainbow trout, brown trout, whatever they might be, of this renowned size, the type of people that come here and are going to stay a week or two, either fish it themselves or with a guide, the increased license fee for them who are going to be partaking in that type of a fishery is not a consequence to them. They're going to, it's inconsequential. They're going to pay that fee gladly, hoping that will be reinvested back in that fishery. They come back a year or two, the fish will be 2 inches bigger and fatter.
Any questions for these gentlemen? If not, thank you for your testimony. And we'll conclude with Bob Olson and Joe Rolliger.
We've been saving our difficult questions for these two.
Co-chairs, committee members, Bob Olson, representing Northwest Steelheaders. We continue to be very supportive of developing more quality fishing opportunities here in Oregon. Last session, all of us learned that there are questions and possible plan components that need careful attention. This proposal will enable us to deal with those issues and come up with a really good work product. Passage of the bill should lead to giving Oregonians and tourists more options to experience very good special fishing situations of all types. I did want to note that it always seems to me like ODFW is involved in almost countless number of worthwhile activities, and passing this measure will give special attention, some focus on this particular assignment, and show that there's a broad level of support for it. So that's part of the reason we're in strong support of it. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Bob. Joe.
Mr. Co-Chairs, my name is Joe Rolliger. I represent the Mackenzie River Guides Association. We support this bill. Like Senator Morris, our guides fish in many wonderful places throughout the world. Oregon has many of those places, and we think they should be both protected and promoted at the same time. As an example, the Upper Willamette has salmon, anadromous fish recover, and there are more returns, there'll be more carcasses. So there's an opportunity for more food to be available for the resident fish, and trout fishing could be promoted in some of those Mackenzie, Willamette, Santa Am, Coast Fork streams. As far as the reluctance to visit a wonderful place because it costs extra, it might actually work the other way around. When I was fishing Bella Coola twice a year, which is about a 1,500 mile round trip in Canada, central Canada, and for steelhead. And the first year that they put in the $10 fee, we thought, well, gee, next year there's $10 a day. And they would only allow Americans to fish 10 days. And we thought, well, next April when we go up, there won't be anybody here. And well, it turned out there are more people there because they heard about it. And it's $25 a day now. And there's still people there all the time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe. Questions for these gentlemen? Vice Chair.
Mr. Olson, isn't it true? And were you using a barbless hook? And you snag that whale off of Mexico.
Boy, he has a long time. Co-chair Krieger, committee members, I think I did have a barb in my hook when I hooked a whale. Sounds like a fish story, but it's true.
Were you cited for that?
No, I turned myself in.
Do you still have any jurisdiction?
No, we had him in judiciary, though. We got to him without him knowing we were going to do it.
Any other questions? If not, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
No one else? Go ahead. Anyone else on this bill? That was our sign-up sheet. With that, I think I will close the public hearing
on House Bill 626. Everybody's a critic. I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 626, and I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 518. And on this one, Liz, I think it would be good for you to give us the summary, if you wouldn't mind.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, House Bill, Senate Bill, Senate Bill 518 would create an exemption from the statute that imposes notice and comment requirements on state agency rulemaking procedures where the Department of State Lands issues removal or fill general permits. It also establishes requirements for the calculation of payments to the Oregon Removal Fill Mitigation Fund.
Thank you, Liz. And we have one person that has signed up. So, Louise Soliday, would you come forward?
Co-chairs Gilliam and Cannon and members of the committee, Louise Soliday, Director of the Department of State Lands. Senate Bill 518 does two things. One, for us, is about further streamlining a process that was supposed to be streamlined in the first place. And the second is about creating some fairness in our mitigation payment plan program. The first piece, back in 2007, we got authority from the legislature to issue what are called general permits. And those permits can cover a suite of activities that are similar in nature, have known outcomes, they have more than a minimal impact, but they're for agencies, entities, local governments, road departments, those sorts of entities who do things frequently involving waters of the state. They're repetitive. They do them in different places. We know what the likely outcomes are, and we can write in a set of standardized conditions into those permits, and then they don't have to come in and get an individual permit from us every time they go out and do an activity under those general permits. Under the statute as it was adopted in 2007, in order to adopt those general permits, we have to go through a full rulemaking process, which takes a streamlined process and makes it a much longer process. So this bill would allow us to still go through a rulemaking, but a shortened process without all of the timelines that stretch out the rulemaking process. We would still do a public notice. We would still do a public comment period as we do on all of our individual permits with these general permits, but we would not have to go through all of the steps and timelines that are in rulemaking. The second piece of this bill in the second section would address an issue that we've had with our mitigation program for a number of years. Currently, if someone is mitigating by paying into the removal fill mitigation fund that we have at the agency, we charge them a statewide average that the bankers are charging for mitigation at the privately owned mitigation banks. We don't think that's very fair to our customers who live in areas where the price of land is relatively low. So if you on the coast, in eastern Oregon, in the southern valley, the price of mitigation based on land prices probably should not be as high as it is in a place like the Portland metro area. We calculate that statewide average currently based on what mitigation bankers are charging. And we have about, I think we actually have 20 certified mitigation banks at the moment. And the prices that they charge range from about $45,000 a credit to about $175,000 credit. So currently we're charging about $80,000 a credit for somebody who is doing their mitigation by paying into the removal fill mitigation bank. This change in the statute would allow us to do something like regional averages. So we could look at the mitigation pricing within a particular geographic region and use an average of that as opposed to a statewide average, which we think will be fairer to people who are having to mitigate in particular areas of the state. It also would allow us to look at doing our pricing based on the functional values of a particular area that's being impacted by a removal fill activity. So if you are impacting a low-quality wetland, your mitigation price would not be as high as if you would be impacting a high-value mitigation wetland or water of the state. So the idea here is to really take that pricing mechanism and make it fairer for our customers depending on where they're located geographically and what kinds of impacts they're having in terms of the functions that those waters of the state currently provide. So we're trying to get at a streamlining issue, and we're trying to get at a fairness issue with our customers with this bill. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions? Vice Chair Krieger.
You don't have to get the individual permit, but if they have, under that permit, if they have a specific project they're going to do, they notify you of the project?
Chair Gilliam and Representative Krieger, under the general permit, they don't even need to... Do they notify us under the general permit? Okay, so we do get a notification. I couldn't remember if we just said they could do it. So we do get a notification. And we do the same thing with our general authorizations. They no longer have to apply for a general authorization. They just need to notify us they're going to do the project.
And, Mr. Chair?
Yes, please.
Just so it's on the record, it appears that the definition of waters of the state remains the same.
Co-Chair Gilliam and Representative Krieger, that's correct.
Vice Chair Boone.
Mr. Chair, hi Louise. What was the problem with the bill? It's a very close vote. I'm just wondering what was going on.
Let's see how I can be diplomatic about this. Co-Chair Gilliam and Representative Boone, I think the bill could have been presented a little differently on the Senate floor. I did talk to some folks who voted no afterwards. They didn't understand what the bill was intended to do. If you look at the vote on the bill, everybody who was in the committee who heard the bill voted for it, and people just didn't understand what we were trying to do.
Thank you.
That certainly never happened with this group. Chair Cannon.
Yeah. Thanks, Louise. Have you heard anyone express concerns about this rulemaking notice piece going away? I mean, that is designed to help sort of protect the public. It's public notice for possible changes in your rules. So say a little bit more about that and why we should say, fine, we're going to exempt these permits from the rulemaking.
So Co-Chair Gilliam and Co-Chair Cannon, when we first drafted this bill, we actually had proposed that we switch from rulemaking to issuing an order to do this. And it was actually the suggestion of legislative council that we keep it with rulemaking but exempt ourselves from going through all the steps that are in 183. I wasn't aware that other agencies had the ability to do that, but apparently they do. And so we agreed that if there was a way to do that and still go through notice and public comment, which we think is important when we're issuing these permits, that would work. I have not heard anyone express concerns. I did have a question about notice and public comment and indicated that we would continue to do that as we do with all of our individual permits.
So just follow up. Would that be on a voluntary basis? I mean, because it would appear that the exemption from 183.335, that is the notice and public comment requirement, isn't it?
Representative Gilliam or Co-Chair Gilliam and Co-Chair Cannon, it is. However, we will, through rulemaking, generally a rulemaking, require ourselves to go through public comment and a public notice and a public comment period on our general permits. So we won't skip that portion of the process. It's the timelines that are in the rulemaking process that drag it out.
Thanks.
Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Louise, I just had two questions. They both have to do with the mitigation project portion of the bill. It says if the actual mitigation project costs are not known because a person is making a payment prior to the identification of the mitigation project. Is that a frequent occurrence? That's the first part of the question. The second, it says that the payment shall be equal to the average cost of the credits. That would mean, as we follow along, it can be adjusted for variables. So that would mean it could go up or it could go down if the average is a baseline. It's not, or is it your thought it would always go down?
Co-Chair Gilliam and Representative Bentz, in some areas it would go down, in some areas it would go up. So it won't always go one way or the other.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Please.
So to go back to the first question, if the actual mitigation projects are not, costs are not known, is that a frequent occurrence? Can you share with us when that happens?
Co-Chair Gilliam, Representative Bentz, a lot of times there's not a good alternative for doing mitigation on the ground, and therefore the costs are not known exactly. And so people pay into the mitigation fund based on the known impacts that are going to happen from the project that they're going to implement, as opposed to the projected cost of an on-the-ground mitigation.
Follow-up. And is there a set of rules that call all of this out that I could then refer to see how it actually works?
Co-Chair Gilliam and Representative Bentz, there is in our removal fill rules, which are in Division 85. I had to think about that for a second.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you for your testimony and for answering our questions. And with that, colleagues, seeing no one else wanting to speak about this bill, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 518. And remind you all the very disappointing news that we got today, that there's no meeting on Thursday. Correct?
That's right.
And thank you for being here. And I'll look forward to seeing you, Representative Boone.
Then I could invite you all to come to the Children's Trust Fund of Oregon's event up at the Governor's Hotel in Portland at 5 o'clock or 5:30 next Thursday.
You could, but you haven't yet.
I am.
Okay, fine. We're all invited.
You're self-invited.
And with that, I adjourn the House Committee on Energy, Environment, and Water 4/22/11.